The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How's everybody doing? Interesting. Let me see if I can play this audio cut here, Eric, from... this was Meet the Press Daily on Friday night.
Right.
Okay, on MSNBC with Chuck Todd, okay? Let's. I just want to play some of this here. We knew at that point that he was going to get... that Kavanaugh was going to get confirmed. Mm-hmm. But here we go.
All right.
Oh, there. Okay.
That's just Roy. Yeah. Michael Evans is probably the best thing to happen to Brett Kavanaugh, isn't it? I mean, all these Democrats that have been flirting with him, they've got to really be embarrassed.
Look how quickly, Susan Collins in that speech got to the sexual assault allegation portion of the speech, look how quickly she moved to the Michael Avenatti role in all of this. If this had been something over the last week to 10 days where you had the testimony from Christine Blasey Ford, you had the questions that arose from that, and that was the issue that was being litigated in sort of the court of public opinion when it came to sexual assault, I wonder if this would have played out any differently than the Michael Avenatti circus comes to town, and it just changes the nature of the debate. It changes the terms of the debate.
It diluted Dr. Ford. Whatever you might think, it did sort of... something about Michael Avenatti might have cheapened.
It was also Deborah Ramirez's allegation, which, you know, by her own account, wasn't initially certain it was Brett, decided it was Brett after thinking about it. The New York Times, to their credit, wouldn't publish it. You know, 20 years ago, no major news publication would have even published those second allegations. The second allegation or the third allegation. And so we are now in a different place in this country where the message out of Me Too, which has a very important message for society, though, has become conflated with politics, which is that by any means necessary, we can score a political win.
You know,
Well, she was wrong. She mixed up the Ramirez allegation with a Swetnick, because it was the Swetnick allegation that the New York Times refused to publish. But you and I, on the bigger picture, you and I actually said that. Said it was an overreach with Ramirez and Swetnick. But really, the entire load of hay that broke the camel's back in that case really was the Avenatti claim, because a lot of it hinged on that, because it was happening in that week, and Avenatti came out on that Monday saying, tomorrow night I'll unveil, and I have evidence and all of that, and it turned out to be bogus. Once again, it's the liar Lanny Davis approach, it failed.
That my point would be, number one, Chuck Todd was there all day Friday.
He did show up to work.
So he did show up for work. But number two is... this is coming from Chuck Todd. Did the same thing with Chris Coons, Representative Coons, when he was asking him, you know, about did Avenatti? He wouldn't answer the question. Senator Coons wouldn't answer the question, but he kept pounding him on and saying, "Didn't Avenatti hurt it? Didn't Avenatti hurt it?" And I'm thinking of Chuck Todd. I'm thinking, Chuck, you're supposed to believe all women, no matter what the evidence is.
Right.
What are you doing? Where's the two things? Where's the anger at Chuck Todd, who seemed from Friday night to be pounding that over and over and over again? I thought all women were to be believed. Mm-hmm. And Chuck Todd is in the mainstream of the liberal mainstream media and talking about the fact that Avenatti's case, hurt it. Now, I do believe from a critical thinking point of view, it did, but it only hurt it. Both Avenatti and the Ramirez heard it, because it was the same thing. If you get one case and that person has no corroboration, you simply have that one case and you're judging that one case.
Right.
When a second one comes out and a third one comes out and it mirrors exactly what the other case is, which is, I selectively remember.
Yes.
there is no cooperating witness. Now, the story's maybe a little bit different, but that's what you got with all three cases. Well, you're done.
Yes.
You're done in the court of popular opinion because it doesn't. So, yeah, did the Ramirez case make the Ford, did the Ramirez case hurt it, and then the Avenatti case hurt it even more? Yes. But it all starts with the fact that the first case was not credible.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if Ramirez would have come out first, that might have been the first one, and then Ford's would have been viewed as not credible because she couldn't remember the majority of the incident from that night, except it was 100% Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, and I think that's you look at that like the and again it in the court of public opinion when we're forming opinions, but it is often formed through information that is given to us by the media and the people that represent anyone making the claims. But if you look at the Weinstein cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did we started? Everything started to be corroborated through the well, not just the number of people coming forward and others who said that they were aware of this kind of activity, but then ultimately his own firm that essentially had a pay schedule, a fine schedule based on this kind of behavior if he were to be caught. And so there were things where, again, if Ford made the claims and couldn't get anything to substantiate those claims, there were nothing there, and then Ramirez came forward and there were, and then a third accuser came forward and she had things to back up her claim, that case would have been hard for the president or Kavanaugh to deny those cases collectively as one big situation that Kavanaugh would have been facing. But that didn't happen. Each of them were weak.
And the only reason the Ford came out is because it was leaked.
Yes. And so
that it would not, it in all likelihood would have never come out if it had gone through the proper judiciary way. If Feinstein would have taken it immediately and taken it to Grassley, then they would have gone to the FBI to do a background check. But everything would have been anonymous.
And what you just heard too was the failure to recognize how Ford's story changed. You know, and they talk about how the Ramirez story changed, how the Swetnick story changed. But look at how the Ford story changed. But their point was, on the political picture of being believable, the scenario that was there started with a he said or she said he said. Well, then are we developing a pattern with the second and third? No, they fell apart. And then we looked back at the first one and realized it also changed and was falling apart. What they were trying to point out here was she could have been the victim, the one person, essentially, if she were to given a Dr. Ford were to have given her testimony and nothing else happened. She could have been the one, and it could have been at least played or spinned without the evidence to back it up in a way that might have influenced votes. But because of the behavior, and they mentioned Collins making the you know, talking about Avenatti's role in her speech, but it's that happened, all of that happened because of what? Because the left made it happen. Because the people sitting on this panel helped make it happen.
Well, you think about it, too, because of the narrative that every woman must be believed.
Mm-hmm.
And after Ford, and again, her story was like, the story itself is incredible, yet you're being told that was her major talking point. You've got to believe the alleged victim. The alleged victim, if a woman alleged victim, must be believed. We've seen the signs. We know it. Must believe the. And then you get a second and a third that also are not credible. Then you start destroying that narrative at that point.
Right.
And I believe that's what they're probably saying, even though they're the ones that claim you need to believe all the women all the time.
Well, and they help build that narrative.
They're you know, even Chuck Todd is making the point, well, that really isn't true.
Yeah. Well, so, this is the version of right after the 2016 election, we need to go to the heartland and listen to their voices more.
Yeah, exactly.
That's basically what you see, except for the fact that it had greater substance and relevance. They were right, by the way, in November of 2016 when they said that, but there was no expectation they were going to do just that. In this case, they're looking back on it and recognizing And again, they were part of carrying that narrative, helping to form those narratives along the way, and then saying, yeah, well, we shouldn't have played it that way. It shouldn't have been played that way. You, when you look at, well, Avenatti, a Stormy Daniels case, that, and no one, absolutely no one is shocked that a Playboy billionaire had an affair. No one. And again, not shocked, not surprised, and also not politically motivated either way by it. But the left creates these narratives. They give Avenatti the ability to introduce the credibility, if you will, from their perspective, not ours, to introduce the Swetnick claim. It must be because he's got a legitimate claim and legal claim against Trump. Now, there must be something that he's got with Swetnick. It must be legit.
It's against Trump, so it has to come out because there must be some legitimacy to it, even if there's not.
Right.
I guess the only other point that I'd like to make is, because this is what I wonder, and again, this is a completely, totally unfounded allegation without anything to back it up whatsoever, but everybody will understand my point. What does Joe Manchin have on Schumer and Feinstein? And what does he have in the Democrat leadership? Nobody's calling for a primary challenger to him in the next election. Nobody is criticizing Joe Manchin from the left at all.
Right.
He's a Democrat. Why aren't there screams that he should be kicked out of the party? Where is that?
Right. Exactly.
How come all the Republicans are taking the flak from the left, but the one Democrat who voted for Kavanaugh, nothing.
Nothing.
It's like, no, but I'll go back to West Virginia. Just continue.
Yeah, I mean, because the reality of it, I mean, you know, I saw so many liberals on social media late Friday and also into, you know, Saturday. It continued on Collins. We need to find somebody who, as Susan Rice spoke up, who will challenge her in the next election, Susan Rice.
Please run,
Susan Rice.
The woman who got on TV and lied about a terrorist attack on Americans.
Please.
That's the kind of credibility the Democrats need.
And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. How many of these liberals on social media would vote for Susan Collins had she voted no on Kavanaugh?
Zero.
You know, it's this disingenuous, well, now we're going to challenge her like you weren't anyway.
Right. Now we're going to vote in an election.
That's right. Now we're going to, we need to find someone to challenge her.
866-90-RED-EYE.
In addition to being required by law, pre- and post-trip inspections are vital to the safety of professional drivers. Conducting thorough pre-trip inspections allows you to catch any problems before heading out on the road. Post-trip inspections give the shop time to react to any problems that were identified. During your next pre- or post-trip inspection, check all safety equipment, including fire extinguishers, triangles, and spare fuses, to make sure they're in the proper location. In the event an emergency responder is trying to locate the fire extinguisher, it's crucial that it's in the proper place and easy to find. TA Truck Service understands the importance of these inspections. If you find any issues during your own pre- or post-trip inspection, stop by a location near you to have your vehicle looked at by one of our expert technicians.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOCK.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Marty in Ridley, California. Marty, welcome. Hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Great show as usual.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I had a thought, and I don't know if it's relevant, but I think that if Mark Judge were to possibly super slander against Dr. Ford or Avenatti, whatever his name is, I think that may do some. I think that may slow them down a little bit in their efforts, because I agree with you guys. They're going to continue to hound this guy. But I think that if Judge were to super slander or libel,
he's a private citizen.
Yep, he could.
He's not under the same rules of a Kavanaugh or anybody else in public office. He's a private citizen.
Yeah.
who was brought into it.
That would definitely slow them down. I think that would give them food for thought.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and it seems like Dr. Ford and her attorneys are looking to basically not pursue this any further. Maybe there's something there. Maybe they've already heard from Judge or his lawyers. But certainly, at the very least, we can say what we do know as fact is that he would have a case. Is he willing to pursue that or not is the question. But he would be looking to protect his name. I mean, it would be something that I would pursue because my name was made public through this with the leak and everything else. That's and who else would be responsible in that chain of events with the leak to the media and all of that? I think you could probably here's what's interesting. The names were brought out as a result of the leak.
Right.
Ford, as far as we know, she didn't leak it. So if that lawsuit were pursued, we would likely find out who leaked it because what responsibility do they have in a case
exactly.
brought by Mark Judge and or his lawyers?
Yeah.
Whoever leaked it to the media would also be partially responsible for getting his name out there, and that you could see, I think, being a part of that.
Now, in the Avenatti case, though, that was him.
Yes.
The Avenatti case.
In the Avenatti case, it's clear.
Of the gang rape. That was right.
That's clear, yes.
Right.
The only possibility of backlash, I'm thinking, is he wouldn't want to put his good buddy. They already think
right.
he's you know, got temper problems. I wouldn't want them to think that he's doing this in spite and using his buddy to do this for spite.
Mm. Yeah, well, it would definitely play out in terms of the spin on it. It would play out in every predictable and even some unpredictable ways. We can try and use our imagination to come up with things. And thank you, Marty, for the call. We appreciate it. And I think a fair point or question. He definitely would have standing, as you point out, Gary, and pointed out during this process. You're in the political arena when you accept the nomination, as Kavanaugh did, and so you would have to go out of your way to prove that malice. But in this case of a Mark Judge, he wouldn't have that burden. But you do wonder about, you know, I guess the future of claims of these particular claims. And really the only one that survived at all was Dr. Ford's claim, and it appears they do not want to pursue that any further. So it's likely
I think you make a case that his name was released because of the leak, and so she wasn't trying to leak it to the media. But in the Avenatti case, to me that would even be And again, I don't know who leaked it, so I don't know. I'm
the Dr. Ford thing.
That is a possible exception here.
Right.
But with the Avenatti case, to me, that's clear.
Yeah.
I mean, going after Kavanaugh with an allegation like that mm-hmm. those things are made of politicians all the time.
Right.
And they're public figures, so the law views them differently.
Yeah.
But if you're a private citizen, you're dragged into it, and you're being accused of a gang rape.
Mm-hmm.
Spiking drinks, you know, things like that. You just can't go out and print that.
Right.
And say that about people.
Right.
Especially private citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because then you've got to make your case and say, where's the probable cause? Well, I think it might have happened. That's not good enough.
No. No, absolutely not. So.
Then could you sue Avenatti personally?
Well, I mean, because. Were the claims that were carried out and how he pursued this, what role did he play in pursuing this in the media, pursuing this in charging, in filing
sue the New Yorker,
the sworn statement, the New Yorker, for publicizing it and publishing it, that, and you would have a case, at least to the extent that, well, the New York Times went out of their way and interviewed dozens and couldn't find firsthand knowledge and made the, in this case, well, it was the responsible decision not to pursue the story. And compare that, of course, to Avenatti's pursuit and, of course, the New Yorker's printing of it.
For those not on Ambien, there's Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's just correct it here. We got mixed up just for a moment there. The New Yorker printed the Ramirez story.
Yes, yes. I said earlier that the commenter that played earlier that she had it wrong. It was it was I who had it wrong, and I want to apologize to MSNBC and Chuck Todd. Or that was actually on Sunday, so NBC and Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I get my my accusers mixed up. But if you look at a lawsuit,
the New Yorker broke the Ramirez story,
right, which was on that Sunday,
and the tweet came out first from the Avenatti story.
Avenatti, the official claim didn't come forward until the following Thursday after the New Yorker story, which was on a Sunday.
Yes. So we were just talking about who might be liable, and we said the New Yorker for the Swetnick story, and we meant New Yorker for the Ramirez story.
Yes. Right. So if you look at I guess if Mark Judge wanted to pursue any lawsuit, I guess anybody that he says slandered, then he would. If you look at the Ford case and the way that played out, pursuing that, it's likely it's not going to happen. I'm guessing it's not going to happen. But in pursuing that, if they pursued the Ford case alone, it's possible we would learn who leaked it. I don't know if we would or not. The media doesn't have to divulge that. But if you're going after, let's say, in the Ford case, if you're naming people would you go after the attorneys? Because it's been brought up, did her attorneys leak it? You know, the question, did her attorneys leak it? It's most likely that it was either a member of the House or Dianne Feinstein and her staff or their staff.
And I believe it was Lindsey Graham who went through it and said, she said, mm-hmm. was not her or her attorneys, mm-hmm. that she didn't leak it.
Right.
Well, she didn't.
Right.
Again, we knew all the time. What we've been told is mm-hmm. that she never wanted it leaked.
Right.
That she wanted it done as an anonymous. This is, again, I'm just saying, I don't know what to believe.
Right. Right. Yes.
Because, but
we also were told that she was afraid of flying.
Right. She said that she didn't want it,
she wanted to remain anonymous,
right? To Feinstein, and, mm-hmm. And then it was eventually done. So, who would have? There's either had to be her lawyers, or either the congresswoman's office, congresswoman in her office. I just can't remember her name at the moment, mm-hmm. or Dianne Feinstein and her staff.
Right.
Had to be one. That's only who it could be, and they seem to throw the blame at her.
During the hearing, you heard Dianne Feinstein addressing Chairman Grassley and saying, I don't know about my staff because I haven't actually asked them directly. Mm-hmm. I don't believe they did it, but I have not asked them if they did directly.
Let's go to Gary in Sparks, Nevada. Gary, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good, very good.
This the Republicans, they keep complaining about all the things that the Democrats do, but they never press charges against anybody. It's like Ford for perjury, or Hillary Clinton, or Dianne Feinstein, and so on. It's like telling a bank robber, "I'm complaining about it, but
where's the perjury? How do you prove the perjury? Right.
Well, you know, if you don't want to take that one, how about Dianne Feinstein?
My point is we go point by point by what you allege they should do. So you're blowing out your first point. You don't go after Ford. So then who do you charge next then? If you're not going to charge Ford, who's the next one?
Okay, Dianne Feinstein. She has a spy as a chauffeur.
Well, I believe that there should be an investigation. Do I believe that?
Yes, of course.
Right. I believe there should be investigation there, and I would agree with you on that.
And I believe I believe they're promising that there will be an investigation. They want to look into that.
But they never make a charge of any kind. Hillary Clinton with the emails. There's
that wasn't the process that followed. That wasn't Republicans' fault.
No.
That was the FBI.
That was Comey, who clearly was politically driven, and that's something you couldn't control in that moment.
Right.
Well, do you expect the Democrats to stop doing any of these things without any charges?
But what
ever?
Did it get them? But what did this behavior get them ultimately in 2016? A massive loss. It is because the reason, Gary, that they bring it up on Capitol Hill, that somebody in elected office would bring these up these items up on Capitol Hill, because we said about if you go back to the email thing with Hillary. Or even back to lying about Benghazi, which wasn't in and of itself a crime, although it should be, but it isn't. You look and see what we said is that on the email, specifically on the email investigation and the whole no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute it, we said, well, what matters here is the court of public opinion, which it did, and ultimately she lost in November of 2016, and thank you for the call. It is not always that, and not that she's above the law. We believe they should have pursued that. But if given a choice, having her in jail is not as great as not having her in the White House.
You know, here's the point about Ford, because maybe he was responding, Gary, and Sparks Nevada was responding to when we were talking to the last caller about Mark Judge filing a defamation of character lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Well, when you go after a private citizen, you have to at least have some type of evidence that this happened. He said, she said, of a private citizen can get you into trouble, but that still might not go to the level of perjury. Perjury is you would have to prove. You would have to have another witness stating she's lying mm-hmm. about it,
right?
Or it was, I'm trying to think of when, you know, somebody has been hit with defamation of character,
right?
When it's something that is just so obvious can't be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so my point was, I don't know the Dr. Ford situation. Is there in the realm of possibility she's committing perjury? Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Anything's in the realm, because we don't know. We don't know anything about it because nobody can corroborate it. So we don't know what she went through. It's proving it.
Yes.
And our point was, as Eric just said, that, well, there are costs to the Democrats. They lost 2016. There may be repercussions here in this upcoming election where they don't win the seats that they should be winning in a first term of a president in the first midterm afterwards, mm-hmm. that almost always the party in power loses seats.
Mm-hmm.
That may not happen. Supreme Court justice was confirmed,
mm-hmm.
And you united a pretty fractured Republican Party. So it isn't always that your punishment is criminal. Sometimes the punishment is criminal. As for Dianne Feinstein, though, and Clinton, as we explained, Clinton wasn't the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. So if you're angry that justice isn't always done, all I can say is this from our point of view. The most important thing is to get the truth out there.
Yes.
That's what I want. Right. I want transparency. I want the truth. I can't do anything if the majority, because one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton was never charged is because there's a majority, there's probably half of America, even if they knew she was guilty, wouldn't want her charged.
Right.
Sorry, but that's just the way that it is. Part of the power comes from public opinion. And it doesn't matter whether she committed a crime or not. They don't want her prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so the best we can do is get out the truth. And we know the truth about Hillary. We know about Benghazi, for example, Susan Rice.
Sure.
That's why we laughed when she said, you know, that she would like to, she would consider running against Collins. It's mm-hmm. like, excuse me, you're the one that lied on Benghazi. Now, it wasn't a criminal offense, but it was still lying about a terrorist attack that killed Americans. Mm-hmm. And everyone in the United States knows it's a lie.
Right.
Everyone in the United States, you could take them and you could show them the law that Hillary Clinton broke right there. You could read the law and everybody would be in agreement that's what she did. And there would still be half of America that said, so what? She should be able to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do anything about it. The best that we can hope for in anything is that the truth is told.
Yes.
I don't know what's going to happen in the FBI investigation.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to show corruption. It's now in the inspector general hands. Michael Horowitz, you and I talked about this. It's the one story that's been buried completely over the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when Trump said, okay, we've got a couple of allies that don't want us to release some of this information, and so we're going to give it to Michael Avenatti. We went, that doesn't make it, or Michael Avenatti. We're going to give it to Michael Horowitz. We'll give it to Michael Avenatti.
Don't give it to Michael Avenatti. Please, Mr. President, don't hand it to him. Whatever you do.
Give it to Michael Horowitz, the inspector general. You and I said to each other, this was on the air, where we went, duh.
Because
it doesn't make any sense. Why would they give it to the inspector general of the Department of Justice if they want to figure out how they can release it and still, you know, keep some of it redacted? They would go to, oh, wait a minute. The inspector general only deals with corruption or improprieties.
Right.
Oh.
Yes.
And that story has been buried. And analysis of that story has been buried by the mainstream media. Why would the president not release it immediately and give it to the inspector general of the Department of Justice? Because he deals with corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't know what's going to happen there, but get us the truth. And if the American people, if they get the truth and still decide to do the wrong thing, that's on them.
Yep. And that's really what it comes down to, is that we've been calling for transparency on all of it. The whole Russian scandal thing. We've said multiple times, regardless of where it falls politically, as long as it is fully transparent in the process, the American people can decide. Because we can't change what people did in the past. Nobody can. Not even the people that did it.
And my question would be that if the Democrats took the House, do they really, really, really want an investigation on Brett Kavanaugh? Is that what they really, really want from three witnesses with no corroboration at all, whose stories were slowly and sometimes rapidly falling apart?
Because this would play out in the public over and over and over for a very, very long time.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. So I read that Cory Booker immediately after the vote was out to campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the president was out campaigning and will continue to campaign. We'll see what happens in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Right now, the odds are still that the Democrats will take the House.
Mm-hmm.
You and I will be watching all the polls here over the next couple of weeks, which will go, you know, right up to the confirmation process and everything that happened, because
right,
I think it's
right,
really important. I mean, from Colin's speech and everything that happened last Friday and into Saturday and see what the polls look like in a week. And it really should be interesting. I mean, by the end of this week, we should be getting some of the polls in.
Right. The midterms 4 weeks from tomorrow, and you have early voting starting here in just a couple of weeks. And I think right now it is going to be interesting to watch those polls, because the polls will now include everything from the hearing, as you mentioned, and up to the confirmation day. And then past that, it will be interesting to watch some of the polls that come out over the next week or two as we get much closer to the election, that show the possible lasting effect, if any, on either side, because as you said, earlier, Gary, and I agree. I don't really know how it's going to motivate the left or the right. Certainly the right is motivated. But is it what's the ratio there? Is there greater motivation on the right, less motivation on the left? Or after the confirmation, does that change anything? Had the left won, would it? Because you could make the argument that if he were not confirmed, would the left feel more empowered? I think that's the argument I would make. There's a good argument to make for that they would feel empowered, that, look, it worked, we got to keep this up. In this case, it didn't work, we need more power. So either one can be motivating. We'll see what the polls show.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Good morning. Well, Justice Kavanaugh confirmed to the Supreme Court on Saturday. Reaction here from Lindsey Graham.
I've never campaigned against a colleague in my life. That's about to change. I'm going to go throughout this country and let people in these, purple states, red states where Trump won, know what I thought, know what I think about this process.
And as close as you'll get to an excited Mitch McConnell.
Multiple witnesses over and over and over kept popping up. Here we had an FBI investigation, and three members of our conference who were undecided took a look at the FBI investigation, and two of the three decided to confirm Judge Kavanaugh.
The only point I'd make, sir, not trying to get in an argument with you, is you opposed the FBI investigation.
No, I didn't.
Here is Susan Collins' reaction to Susan Rice saying that she might challenge her for the Maine seat.
Her family has a home in Maine, but they don't. She doesn't live in the state of Maine. Everybody knows that. But the irony is, back in 2009, when she was nominated to be ambassador of the UN, she came to me, even though I did not know her back then at all, and pleaded with me to introduce her before the committee, which I was happy to do because her family had links to the state of Maine.
So here we are. I mean, I'm thinking that when we did our last show, which would have been Friday morning, Thursday night, Friday morning.
Yeah.
That seems like it was a year ago.
Yeah. No, so much happened. I mean, Saturday alone. Friday and Saturday.
Friday, yeah.
Okay. Friday seemed like 3 days, and then Saturday. Thank you, Steve Martin. But if you look at the, I'm thinking back even longer over the last couple of weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's been a year because so much has happened in this process. So the question is, how much of this carries over and is motivating on either side? It is somewhat motivating likely on each side, but keep in mind that young people historically aren't motivated at all during midterms. And so that's where the left has a problem that could be different. But I don't know that it will be. If you look at this and you even had Chuck Todd and his guests going over it, going pretty much, it's one thing for Dr. Ford, but then Ramirez and then the Avenatti case with Swetnick, that kind of went too far. Well, many people will be looking back at this. And I think young people look back at this and their lives happen just like the news cycle happens. Their lives are just like the news cycle, which is, oh, wait a minute, you're talking about something last Friday. No. My life has moved on. It's already Monday. And we always talk about, You know, that was so last week. That was so October 5th. Well, that's the case with many young people. So I think if they live that way, by the time the election rolls around 4 weeks from tomorrow, they may not be motivated to get out. And it could be that an Avenatti or, you know, Lanny Davis or any of them who lied about claims and any of this along the way, not just in the confirmation process, but the Lanny Davis thing with Cohen, could be those factors that really unmotivate those young people. Because keep in mind, this is the same group that we've been talking about since 2016, that they don't care who you are. You could have been on their side yesterday, but today you're their oppressor, or you're the people that don't work for them, that don't, that are no longer useful
well,
to them.
You know, we saw this over the last couple of weeks, which first off, it was, you know, women are to be believed. Then it became, well, only some women are to be believed. Conservative women aren't to be believed. And then as you and I were talking about some of the stories that came out and some of the blame now being thrown at white women are the reason that, you know, Kavanaugh was confirmed. And it gets back to what my friend, Independent Bob, called me and, you know, over the years. Now, he has moved more during the Obama years. He became more moderate Republican, I would say, and in some cases, even conservative. I even had stated that, well, maybe we shouldn't call him Independent Bob anymore. But he still proclaims all the time that he's an independent.
Right.
And when he called me yesterday and just said, you could just, he was so intense. He said, how could I ever vote for a Democrat again? Said, how can I vote for any party that tells me women are always right and white men are always wrong?
Mm, right.
He said, white men aren't always right. And women are not, or excuse me, white men aren't always wrong. Mm-hmm. White men aren't always right. Women aren't always wrong. Women aren't only right. Aren't always right. You've got to take it on a case by case basis. He said, I know that. He said, everybody knows it. And he told me, he said, but I couldn't change anybody's mind on this, because he was involved in a ton of social media debates. And he was, you know, talking about his friends on the left that would stick to some minutia point that wouldn't even matter. And I told him, I said, well, look, the point I'm looking at is not trying to convince them, because you're never going to convince them. What you're trying to do is convince the middle, trying to convince people like you. And I told him, I said, mm-hmm. I remember you 12, 13 years ago. Your look right now is completely, completely different. Another family member of mine who was always more conservative, but always said, well, it's good to have the Democrats there. It's good to have the Democrats there. It's good to have the Democrats there. Was in a conversation with them over the weekend. And I explained, I said, well, you know what the Democrats did here? And as soon as I said that, they just started going off and just said, I can't believe they've gone to this point. And it's the mainstream of the Democrats. It's not
right,
some
right.
fringe.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said, you know, I always like it that, you know, I agree mostly with the Republicans, but it's always good to have an opposition party there. But he said, what good is that opposition party?
Yeah.
He said, because, you know, the Republicans don't always do the right thing. He said, and sometimes they need to be kept in check. He said, but who keeps them in check? The Democrats? The mainstream of the Democrats have gone crazy. And I think that is a key here. So when I look at a couple of weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, and the election, I look at history. And history shows the vast majority of times when you get to this point and you've got a Republican president, you've got a Republican House, you've got a Republican Senate. In all likelihood, the Republicans should lose seats.
Yeah.
That's what history shows. It's almost the same as when people called us up and the one gentleman, I'll never forget, you remember the call too, about a month before the election of Trump, and he said, you guys are going to be surprised when Trump wins. And we said, no, we're not, because history shows he should win based on the economy, because the economy actually has been so bad and people have felt it and they view that there's a need for change. So you look at history and you think, yeah, now the Democrats should take, now should they take enough seats to actually take over the House? I don't know. But then you see the big, huge unknown, and that is the Kavanaugh nomination. I still can't come up in my mind when the Republicans have been so united. The only thing that comes to my mind is 1994. I'd only been in talk radio for 5 years. And I remember 94 caught everybody off guard, except for Zogby. Remember Zogby had it?
Yeah.
That's right. That's where Zogby became a pollster.
Yeah.
He came closest to catching what was actually happening. Now, that was a united GOP at that point. It's just nobody knew that they were united to all go out and vote and were motivated at that point. I have not seen a Republican Party that was as fractured as this Republican Party has been. And within a period of 2 weeks is a completely united party, not because they love the leader necessarily of the party who would be the president, not because they all love him, a majority do, but it's because they have seen what the other party is, and they look at the guy that they hated just a little while ago and said, you know something, he's really not that bad. I wish he wouldn't say this. I wish he wouldn't tweet this. But these people, when you see what they actually want, you know, they call Trump a fascist. And at times I didn't like it because at times I'm speaking for me. I'm speaking for Never Trumpers. You know, Never Trumpers say, but, you know, he talks authoritarian even if he isn't. And sometimes he sounds intolerant even if he isn't. Well, then you see what the Democrats do and you say, well, actually, this is what they mean.
Right.
There's no nuanced opinions here to what they mean. They don't believe in due process. They don't believe in a presumption of innocence. They stereotype. They say it, you know, and they stereotype to fit their particular narrative at the moment and will change a day later.
Yeah, it's if you look at the, I think, where the Republicans have come together over 2 weeks, over the last couple of weeks, it's not even just the Kavanaugh nomination in and of itself or protecting the process during a Supreme Court nomination, even. It's not just Lindsey Graham and the things he said. I mean, part of it, it's all of those and more. It is, but the bigger picture is, including, by the way, Collins, you know, and her speech, which got a lot of praise on Friday. But it really is, you know, the fact that it seems as if the party is saying, yeah, it's time to build a wall around the party and what it really stands for, and a wall around the Constitution to protect it. It's time that the party joined hands here, and not that everybody has to agree on everything, but there has to be a greater respect, and I think campaigning to go out and show and demonstrate clearly over and over again what the other side is doing and saying, look, we can all have our discussions on those issues within our house. But on the outside, you need to know where the danger lies to you every single day. And it is from this kind of behavior.
You know, the interesting thing is, for all the accusations of being a fascist and authoritarian that have been leveled at Trump, that maybe some Never Trumpers bought into.
Mm-hmm.
A majority of Republicans, it was ridiculous, mm-hmm. because he wasn't. If you see what he's about, if you see the things that he loves, if you see the legislation that he's put into effect, if you see his executive orders and what comes out of the White House about separation of powers and what they believe, you know that's not true.
Right.
I think that I think you're right on here. This wasn't just about the nomination. It was the belief that the Democrats truly are, and it really hit when he realized it was the mainstream. It was those in the Senate Judiciary Committee. It is what is viewed as the leadership of the Democrat Party, that the mindset of authoritarianism and fascism, that mindset, that they were throwing at Trump actually belongs to their party.
And they've demonstrated it officially here.
And yes. I think it has scared some Republicans who didn't want to be a part of, you know, of supporting the Republican Party. I think it scared them straight.
Right.
I really do. I really think that when they saw it, they went, whoa, we just never thought they'd do this.
And you know, the last motivator that we could even come close, during the Trump presidency, to paralleling this was when Roy Moore lost, they realized they need to get taxes done.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't getting it done, and it was, well, no. And then all of a sudden, right after Roy Moore's loss, they got it done. What happened over the last couple of weeks should be a greater motivator on all legislative and procedural issues, and it should be for the foreseeable future.
But that tax policy did not unite the actual party the way that this has.
No, it didn't.
And I mean, it
was the effect of the Roy Moore loss that got them motivated, and that's minuscule compared to what you've seen over the last 2 weeks.
And not just united of the Republican Party. I'm talking about the members of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
And the politicians. I'm talking about the rank and file.
Oh, no, no,
and
no,
even,
no.
Even the
Because that's Trump. Where it comes from. That's where the motivation comes from. Because if you look at what drives the legislative process, well, if we were all still shouting away with Obamacare, it would have been gone the first several months that Trump was in office.
Right.
So, no, that's I think you point out the base of it, but that's really where I was going with all of this, is that the party itself, which, of course, is driven by the rank and file. So the things that are important to get done, there has to be greater pressure to keep all of those on Capitol Hill and the president motivated to get them done and maintain the process, defend the process and the Constitution.
Line open if you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
A food product grown from the cells of cattle. Is it beef? Is it even meat? Is it safe? What agency should decide those issues? The Ag Department that regulates and inspects livestock products, or FDA that handles other processed foods? The other day, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue gave an audience his take on it.
We believe that FDA has some equity at the beginning of this process in the laboratory and making sure they're safe products that could be commercialized. When they become to the commercial stage, we think that's USDA's responsibility to regulate and to inspect those products, and that's what we will work toward.
That would cut industry confusion in this complex matter, and Purdue said,
we can go a long way between FDA and USDA in resolving how we move forward quickly.
Some companies say they're going to be ready to market cultured meat in a year or two, so Purdue says moving quickly is vital.
We don't want this new technology to feel like they've got to go offshore outside of the United States to get a fair regulatory protocol.
USDA and FDA will hold a two-day joint meeting on this whole issue later this month. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Some audio and your calls coming up following the bottom of the hour, just looking at Tropical Storm Michael, that will be moving very, very quickly, won't it?
Yeah, this thing is fast-tracked, so expected to head toward the Florida Panhandle over the next couple of days, and then moving up over South and North Carolina, and then back out over water, according to the current track, and they just updated that a little while ago, so it could have winds somewhere in the 80 mile an hour range by the time it makes landfall there in Florida here in a couple of days, and then diminishing overland as they always do.
But, yeah, they expect it could be a Category 2 though by the time it hits the
land. And that's it. If right now the forecast, of course, as they always do, kind of change going back and forth, and And so we'll follow it as, in fact, John will. In our forecast. And for Omnitrax, here's your national forecast.
We begin the week with a very active weather map. There are at least three other systems in the North Atlantic that are being monitored by the National Hurricane Center, but we're focused now on Tropical Storm Michael, expected to bring to the northeastern Gulf Coast by midweek. The risk of dangerous storm surge, rainfall, wind impacts continue to increase. We'll see at least tropical storm-force winds arrive by tomorrow night. From an area basically from west of Tallahassee into the New Orleans area, but most of South Florida can expect some impact as well. That would be the Gulf side or western side of the state. The system expected to track right on up through southern Georgia, the outer banks of South Carolina and North Carolina as well throughout the latter part of the week. Heavy rain north and south of a line from just west of I-35 today. Snow for the upper reaches of the northern Rockies. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
A show for everyone, including those living in a delusional world. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, our audio cut of the day was Lindsey Graham on Fox News Sunday.
All okay? Right.
That's all we can. That's all we have to say. All
right.
Here's part of the interview.
What has gotten so much under your skin? I wanted to take a look at Lindsey Graham over the last couple of weeks. Here you are.
This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics.
I thought she was handled respectfully. I thought Kavanaugh was treated like crap. Yeah, well, boo yourself.
So why are you? Well, now you seem happy, but why are you, or have you been an unhappy warrior these couple of weeks?
I'm happy because the effort to humiliate and railroad a man I've known for 20 years who's never been banned from a mall, unlike Roy Moore, failed. I'm happy that those who tried to destroy his life fell short. I'm glad those who tried to overturn the rule of law and replace it with mob rule lost. I've never been more pissed in my life. I voted for Sotomayor and Kagan. I would have never done this to them. This was character assassination. This was wanting power too much. And to the extent that I came to the aid of this good man and helped defeat this debacle, I am happy as a clam.
All right. Well, let me tell you something that may not make you happy or bring it up, because it appears the Kavanaugh confirmation is not going to end this fight. Democratic Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York, who would, if the Democrats take the House, become the House Judiciary Chairman, has already talked about launching an investigation into alleged misconduct by Kavanaugh. Nancy Pelosi says she wants to see the FBI interviews in the second background check. It doesn't sound like this is going to end.
Well, we'll know in November if that makes sense. I hope everybody running for the House in these purple districts will be asked the question, do you support impeaching Judge Kavanaugh based on 5 allegations, none of which could be corroborated? Do you want an outcome so badly that you would basically turn the law upside down? All I can say is that this is going to the streets at the ballot box. I've never campaigned against a colleague in my life. That's about to change. I'm going to go throughout this country and let people in these, purple states, red states where Trump won, know what I thought, know what I think about this process.
Now, we were talking before we came on the air, and I see that you have a list of all the people that the president has said are on the list for potential nominees.
Yeah.
What's your point?
Well, here's my point. This is a list that was compiled in November, but he actually put it out during the campaign. There are 20-something people on this list. I'm asking Chuck Schumer, name 5, name 3, name 1 that would be okay with you. Brett Kavanaugh was a mainstream judge. I would have chosen him if I'd been president. Bush supported him. Everybody running for president on our side believed that Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch were outstanding conservative jurists. The other side wants to cancel the election. So, Chuck, you want somebody new. look at this list and see if there's anybody you agree to. But what you want to do, Senator Schumer, is to overturn the election. And you pick the judges. We're not going to let you pick the judges. If you want to pick judges, then you need to win the White House.
There you have it. I mean, that's the process. But I think he spells out in that and also on that day a week ago, last Thursday, in his speech at the hearing, it was spelling out how the process had been completely bulldozed by the left. And not the protesters, not the media, but members of that committee. The leaders of the party. And that should be motivating to every Republican. I believe it is. But I think, and hearing the Lindsey Graham talk about the campaigning he'll do in some of those purple states over the next few weeks to remind people, that kind of campaigning has to be done not just leading up to the midterm, but after the midterm and beyond. The Republicans, as we've been calling them out for many years on this program, need to do a better job at spelling out exactly what the left is doing and reminding the public what the left is doing and be factual. You don't have to use the hyperbole. You show exactly what they were doing. You demonstrate it, as one caller said, you know, just play some of, you know, their antics in their own words, as we've been saying for years.
We've said that for years.
Yeah, and just demonstrate that over and over and over again and how hurtful and destructive it is to this country.
For about the last, I'm going to say, 6, 7, 8 years, you and I have been saying that it's never been easier to defend conservative ideology in our lifetime because of where the left has gone. I guess I can also say that it's never been easier to run a negative ad campaign without having to be crude or rude yourself. All you have to do is play the audio of your opposition, and that accomplishes it in itself. You don't have to add on to anything from what we have seen the last 2 weeks. You don't have to be, as a Republican, you don't have to be caught in any untruths.
Right.
All you have to do is point out the truth of where now, and this is very, very important, where the mainstream of the Democrat Party is now. Not the fringe, but the mainstream. And I think that one of the things that I have seen, and it's anecdotal evidence to figure out what all the polls mean and how it's going to apply in 4 weeks, I don't know. But the one thing that I have gotten from independents is they look at the Democrat Party right now and they say, oh, my God, what in the world are these people about? There is no sense of fairness. There is no sense of civility.
Right.
They don't they don't care about, you know, taking somebody and destroying their life. And I mean, I've heard this from independents on both sides,
mm-hmm.
that they destroyed Ford's life by not keeping it secret. Then they went on to try to destroy Kavanaugh's life.
Right.
Said on both sides, he said, it seems like the only thing that matters, we don't care whose life we destroy, we don't care what promises we break, we don't care what we do, we don't care about a presumption of innocence, we don't care about giving you anonymity, we just want to win, and we will do anything to win. We will demean, we won't play fair. And I do think that there is something here that is even outside of the normal politics that we go through every day. That this isn't going to be a discussion. If this goes in the favor of Republicans, that which means you're going to get a lot of independents that move in the Republican, you know, direction, it's going to be not be because of, oh, okay, well, what will Gorsuch and Kavanaugh do when it comes to regulations of the EPA? Now,
right,
it may matter to you, but I don't think that's what's going to drive it. I think what's going to drive it is the very clear drama that we have gone through over the last 2 weeks where people will look at the Democrat Party and say, these aren't fair people. These aren't reasonable people.
Right. And I think if you look at, I got to be honest with you, the protesters may be driving the left, but they're driving away mainstream America. The left may think that they're winning because the protesters are out there gaining the attention for them, and that they're jumping on, in some cases, their bandwagon and their claims. The fact of the matter is, that's not the case with middle America. They see the behavior of the protest. It's not to dismiss a claim. It is, in fact, to do exactly what was done in this case and to properly vet a claim to the extent that the president came out and ordered a seventh background check, and that Grassley gave Dr. Ford her time on television in front of the American people to make her case.
You know something? You just brought up a great point there, because when I was giving my explanation there, I wasn't even talking about the protesters. You brought up the protesters, and I think the unique thing that we've gotten to the point now where there's no difference in many of the public's mind between the protesters and the mainstream
right.
politicians. They're saying the exact same things.
Yes.
They're saying that it's not like you can sit there and say, well, those are just the crazy protesters. No, because the crazy protesters and the Democrat leadership of the Senate Judiciary Committee are using the same arguments.
Yes, they are. They're basically co-opting the arguments and claims made by these protesters and their tactics. I mean, look at even before we got to the Dr. Ford hearing, what was the tactic being considered the first day? The weekend before the first day of hearing confirmation hearings on Kavanaugh, it was, well, what if we just all get up and walk out over the whole documents thing? By the way, where'd that go? Nowhere. Because they had nothing, as Democrats always do these days. It wasn't about challenging him on his position on Roe v. Wade or anything else. It wasn't. I mean, it was for Republicans with Sotomayor. Or Kagan, you know, what do you think if the government, can the government force you to buy vegetables? And, you know, that was a question based on, of course, a parallel to Obamacare. But that the left doesn't care to do that anymore. So they co-opt the claims made by the far left, and they have become the far left, the mainstream members of the party. The ones who are elected to office have become that because they think it's working. Kamala Harris can go back to California and certainly get praise there. But the damage done by the kind of behavior by Hirono and her words and the others on that committee and their behavior, all of that carries over into the election elsewhere. It's not about, Hirono can say that and get reelected in Hawaii. Kamala Harris can say whatever she wants to and get reelected in California. But how did you damage anybody else that's right now on the brink of losing their election? You did. And we'll find out how far that went about 4 weeks from tomorrow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And finally, you and I predicted that this would eventually happen when President Trump won in 2016. You had the call to get rid of the Electoral College.
Right.
And you and I said, well, if you're going to get rid of the Electoral College, the next thing that Democrats will have to be screaming is we need to get rid of the Senate. Because the Electoral College, it's not popular vote wins. The Senate is the concept where every state has two senators. The House is done by appropriation of population. Right. The Senate is not. And so we figured that someday you were going to have the left come out and say the Senate needs to go. Well, it finally happened. NBC reporter Ken Delinian over the weekend said it may not happen in our lifetime, but the idea that North Dakota and New York get the same representation in the Senate has to change. Senators representing less than half of the U.S. are allowed or about to confirm a nominee opposed by most Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't understand that we're not a direct democracy. We are a constitutional republic, and we are a constitutional republic for a few reasons.
Yes.
One is the separation of powers to ensure that power does not coagulate in one section. Either it's one section of the country, one section of the government. The other reason is that the bicameral legislature, which is the House of Representatives and Senate, the House represents the people. The Senate represents the region, mm-hmm. that part which is the individual states. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the way, that was the compromise that they made. And one of the reasons was they didn't want, again, power to be concentrated in one area of the government. We're not going to change the Senate.
Not going to happen.
States are not going to give up their two senators.
By the way, Ocasio-Cortez chimed in on the whole Electoral College. She said, no, we don't need to do away with the Electoral College. We just need someone to pay for our Electoral College. And someone had to explain.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.